I'm going to address what seems like a kind of dilemma or contradiction in our discussions. Some of the panelists have called for more autonomy for research, and others more social control of the consequences of research. So can we find a resolution for this dilemma? I think we can, but I'll take you through some discussion of how. I mean, obviously everyone here wants more public involvement in science, but that doesn't mean abolishing labs and voting on the truth. Clearly we have more modest objectives. But exactly what do we mean by public involvement, given that we have these contradictory agendas, autonomy on the one hand and regulation on the other? I'm going to talk first about two styles of involvement between science and society, or two expressions of the public responsibility of scientists, and then go on from there to talk about the relation of science and technology, because I think it's through understanding that relation that we can resolve this dilemma. So first, something about the scientist's responsibility. This becomes an issue as a result of the Second World War, the involvement of scientists in military production in the Second World War, the Manhattan Project especially. When scientists made the atom bomb, they worked in complete secrecy. And after they had developed a working bomb, they realized that they were the only citizens in the United States who could say anything about it, because everyone else had been excluded from knowledge of the existence of the project. So suddenly the scientists recognized themselves as not only scientists working with their knowledge, but also as citizens representing the public opinion. And a number of them tried to intervene with government officials the way ordinary citizens might in a normal situation, by circulating petitions and so on, primarily for non-use. And then this was, of course, not successful. The bomb was used. After the war, they continued to advocate for disarmament, test bans, nuclear proliferation, non-proliferation treaty, and so on, and effectively created the framework we now live with. But it took, of course, many years for the public to come to an understanding of the issues. This is the first expression of scientists accepting responsibility to the public. But note that there's a paternalistic aspect. They accept the responsibility as teachers of the public, people who will inform the public. So I want to move from there to a second model, in which also it's scientists operating as citizens draw on their expertise in order to influence public events. In the second model, we've already actually seen many examples from the people from India in our forum, who've talked about scientists working directly with people involved in traditional crafts to try and help them improve their production methods. I actually am more aware of conflictual situations in which scientists help public advocacy groups influence opinion. This is more characteristic of the way scientists have been working with the public in the United States. There are many famous examples, and one example is the Love Canal case, where a whole community was built on top of a toxic waste dump, and many years later people suffered illnesses, and volunteer scientists helped them to make a case for being relocated and helped with the consequences of this crazy situation. And another example that is of great interest is the relationship of AIDS patients to medical and scientific personnel in that field. At first there were great conflicts because the AIDS patients did not approve of the design of the research systems that were being deployed. But eventually they were invited to advise the scientists and doctors on how to do research on human subjects in the case of AIDS, and they made a considerable impact. So these are cases where scientists are in a more collaborative relationship rather than a paternalistic relationship. And I think that this is a good model for us to work from. Okay, so this is what I can wanted to say briefly about the style of collaboration, of what public involvement might mean. Now I want to talk a bit about the consequences. You'll note that the examples that I gave, things like atom bombs and toxic waste dumps and AIDS vaccines and so on, all of this, these are not truths. These are technologies. They're technical devices of one sort or another. They require scientific input in order to be created, but they go through many other social processes before there is an output of a product. And those processes are what we identify with technology. Technology involves industrial organizations. It involves many activities that have their own logic, that are not part of the research process and don't resemble research. When we emphasize science, and it's in the name of our operation here, it seems that we're talking about cognition, about knowledge. And truth is, of course, involved in technology, and scientific truth, and also the kinds of knowledge that are possessed by ordinary people are all involved in the production of technology. But the issues that motivate people to be involved and the structure of the technological production is really quite different from what goes on in science. Ordinary people are concerned, for example, about the health consequences of some a pesticide or pollution or whatever. The truth is merely instrumental in their coming to grips with the consequences of research. And So the kinds of pressures that are that emerge in relation to technology really don't have a lot to do with the pursuit of knowledge. And that needs to be taken into account. When we talk about the autonomy of research, and we want scientists to have some independence and freedom, for example, from the market, we are talking about a very specialized kind of activity, not about these general questions that emerge in the public sphere as matters for debate, like pollution and medical issues and so on. Of course, we have to qualify the notion of autonomy of research a little bit, because we don't want scientists to be completely independent of society in choosing what money is spent on. This needs to be done by governmental organizations. But on the other hand, we don't want governments to decide what's true. We want scientists to do that. It's difficult and requires rigorous procedures that only scientific communities can mobilize. Technology is quite different. It's a heteronymous domain by its very nature. And there are good reasons for this. Raghu already mentioned that there are many alternatives in technology. There aren't a lot of good alternatives to Einstein's theory of relativity, but there's hundreds of different ways to make an automobile or to produce energy, or you name it. There are many alternatives, and the choice between them is not necessarily going to be based on technical criteria. It may be based on social criteria, political criteria, economic criteria. Those choices are passed down a chain of command to scientific and technical workers engaged in producing technology. When we talk about public involvement or democratization of that process, we're not talking about anything shocking or bizarre, as it would be, say, to vote on the truth of the theory of relativity, to vote on how much pollution we want automobiles to produce, or to have our representatives vote on it, is just another input, social input, among the many that are inevitably going to intervene between science and technology. Okay, so I think that these considerations resolve the dilemma. We want research to be autonomous within the limits that I mentioned. Technology we want to be heteronymous. Research needs to involve forms of collaboration with the public, perhaps. In some cases, the public will know things researchers need to learn, can alert them to problems, and so on. But in the end, we want the scientists to make final decisions on the results, on the truth. Whereas with technology, we want, since the decisions are subject to organizational control, we want a lot of public involvement. The potential for a conflict of interest in the case of technology is overwhelming and has to be dealt with by appropriate kinds of controls and checks. So there's no autonomy for technology. We can rely on democracy to protect the public and to protect scientific autonomy. Okay, so I'm finished, essentially. I just want to conclude by saying that we have to be careful when we use the word science, that we don't confuse the people who are outside our group, and so that they don't think we're talking about knowledge. In fact, we're generally mostly talking about regulation. We want to control technology, the consequences of scientific research, not directly control science itself. Okay, so that's the conclusion of my talk. Thank you.